Welcome back to the A-Suite Podcast. We are UCLA Anderson MBA students bringing you the best insights on industry deep dives, the MBA experience in general, and so much more. Today, we're talking about the TV show Schitt's Creek, and as usual, bringing in our insights from our MBA classes to evaluate some of their business decisions like rebranding the motel and launching the Rose Apothecary. Whether you're an avid Schitt's Creek fan or haven't yet watched the series at all, we hope you enjoy listening.
Welcome back to another episode of the A-Suite Podcast. Today, we're talking about one of our favorite shows, Schitt's Creek. It really needs no introduction, but the Rose family, I personally feel like they've shepherded me through a lot of 2020 because that's when I discovered their show, and they really helped me in so many ways. And we're super excited to talk about some of the family businesses that spring up when they move to Schitt's Creek, including the Rosebud Motel, the Rose Apothecary, and of course, the PR maven herself, Alexis. And to do that today, I have with me Jody Christensen, our wonderful executive producer, and John Lee, host and co-creator of the A-Suite Podcast. How are you both doing?
Great. Happy to be here and discussing this. I love the show.
Yeah, I'm doing swell. I've never watched it, but in preparation, I've watched 4 episodes and now I'm a complete expert on everything about Schitt's Creek and the family.
What we wanted to talk about today, like I said, is just some of the really hilarious and interesting experiences that the Rose family goes through. And so for anyone who's not familiar with Schitt's Creek, I'd like you to pause and go binge it on Netflix. But if you aren't going to do that right now, if you're not going to do that right now, essentially, very stuck up, wealthy family. Their wealth comes from the Rosebud or Rose video, which is essentially a blockbuster. They go bankrupt and they have to sell everything, or the government takes it from them because they're bankrupt, and they end up moving to this town called Schitt's Creek, which Johnny Rose, played by Eugene Levy, bought as a joke years ago. And so this is the only thing that the government / bank didn't take from them because they didn't want it because Schitt's Creek sucks that much. So they end up moving there, and it is a show about learning what's important in life, friendship, family, understanding that you don't need all of these fancy things or important friends to be happy. There's some beautiful romances. There's some hilarious crow jokes and everything in between with really cool characters. And the show just came to an end earlier in 2020. So the whole show's out there for you to watch and totally just fantastic. Couldn't recommend it enough. Jody, I know you're a fan. So what is your just like quick 30-second on why Schitt's Creek's a great show?
Oh man, if you like Arrested Development, I think Schitt's Creek is like a better version of it. That might be a controversial statement because Arrested
Development That's interesting.
It's truly great. But Arrested Development, per the name, indicates that they don't actually progress as humans, right? Like they keep falling into the same old patterns and habits, and they're always selfish. But in Schitt's Creek, you start with a similar family who's kind of lost everything, used to luxury, but they live in this small town and they grow to love it, and they grow to love the people there and grow closer as a family. And I think it has the same level of humor as Arrested Development, but there's more of a message to it. And I think the cast is incredible. I like can't decide who's the best actor. Mm-hmm. If I had to pick, I might say Catherine O'Hara. She's fantastic. She has an amazing, hilarious accent throughout the whole show. I don't know what it's supposed to be. But yeah, she's really great. They're all really fantastic and portray really, really great characters. So I enjoy it a lot. It's probably one of my
I'm pretty sure we're going to have to do some accents before this episode ends. My personal favorite, I just find myself impersonating Alexis in everyday things, especially her hand movements. So, David. I just really do this all the time now.
John, did you pick up on that when you were watching your 4 episodes? Did she do any of that?
Oh, yeah.
What's really cool about being on the outside looking in and just jumping into these random episodes throughout the entire show is like each character is so well like played out that you pick up on the intricacies of each character. And so like, yeah, her thing is she like, it's kind of like doing things with her hands and her wrists and like looking at different directions. The guy also like does this wrist thing and he's not really too confident in a lot of the things that he's doing. And I couldn't tell, I will say for the son, what's his name?
David.
Okay. So I couldn't tell with him if he was being like passive aggressive most of the time, or he was like genuinely just curious. And I also didn't know that his boyfriend was the other person that ran the store that they opened up. So trying to figure out that relationship on the fly was interesting, because I was like, that's a really mean way to talk to like another employee or like another co-founder. But then I realized they had a relationship. But yeah, all I'm trying to say is it's really cool to see that each character is so well developed that I can like very much so pinpoint exactly what you're saying on each of the characters. And in regards to the show, it's just nice because it was pretty wholesome. I felt like everyone's growing, everyone's trying to learn, and they're finding deeper meaning in their own lives as well as each other's, and sharing that process together is really cool. I like that. It made me feel warm inside. So yeah.
So many great things that you just said, just to pick out a few. David does act that way towards random people, but especially towards the ones that he loves and is, you know, comfortable with and everything. And then I agree, the show is really wholesome, which maybe you wouldn't know by the title because it's making a joke about Schitt's Creek. And I personally, like, so my last name is Schiff, which is really similar to shit.
How did I not draw this connection sooner?
Turn those T's into F's and it's Schiff's Creek. So I feel an extra connection to the show because of that. And in middle school, a teacher while doing roll accidentally said Katie Schitt, and the class laughed at me for a long time. So I feel very connected to this show.
I love it.
Yeah, so let's just jump into it. Let's start off talking about the Rosebud Motel. So when the show starts, it's called the Bud Motel. And that's right?
I don't remember. I'm
pretty sure it starts as the Bud Motel. But anyway, the show starts and essentially the Rose family has to move into this motel because they have nowhere else to go, and for some reason they never move out of the motel. Makes sense. Eventually they invest in it and become the owners and operators alongside Stevie, so they live in this motel the entirety of the show. One of our standout episodes that we think is a great connection to the business strategy of the Rosebud Hotel is season 3, episode 5, Rooms by the Hour. So for anyone who doesn't remember, Johnny, who now works in the motel, rents out the rooms to a local businesswoman, only to find out that she runs a prostitution ring out of the motel. Let's just break it down. So Johnny is so excited to have the motel filled at capacity for the first time that he overlooks what's going on, which I think is understandable.
Yeah, I mean, I totally think that's understandable. You want to have a thriving business. And it seemed like, because that was like the first episode I watched, it seemed like business wasn't that great. And they're struggling to make ends meet, struggling with their tech, scheduling, and just like all the ins and outs of running a motel. Their operations just didn't really seem up to par. And at the very first chance that he could get a deal, he changed his whole business plan, the business structure of the motel. Like, you don't do motels by the hour. That's never been a thing, I don't think. So usually it's by night. And so he probably, I'm pretty sure he charged less. And then just based on when it was used. So just left a lot of profit, a lot of money on the table there. And so this is like quick initial thoughts. I
mean, in a sense, he's doing something that seems on the surface like it could be a smart business strategy, because as we learned, marketing, and maybe we've also talked about this in strategy, but you can segment the market depending on like different consumer needs. So one consumer might want to stay for a night, one consumer might want to stay only for a few hours. And so you can actually capture more, this is economics, you can capture more of the market if you offer different products or services to these different consumers. So he's
very personalized pricing. Yeah, strategy.
Yeah, so he's actually thinking kind of like, oh, I'm getting a new consumer here. Someone, if I charge them for the full night, maybe they would go somewhere else. So I think he's thinking about it logically, but obviously he's kind of missing what's really happening here. And it's pretty funny when Stevie comes back and she's like, they're renting it by the hour. And like, he just like totally misses what's going on until he sees, like talks to them and sees these men are coming in and out of the rooms. And yeah, they have to shut it down eventually.
Yeah, it's an interesting ethics question if you're running a business, which is, sure, this is the first time they've sold out. It's probably more money that the motel was earning than the whole time that Johnny has worked there and owned it. But it is also illegal. For those who don't know, this is a Canadian sitcom. So it's shot and filmed in Canada. And I'm pretty sure Schitt's Creek is in Canada somewhere. So I'm not 100% sure about prostitution laws in Canada, but I'm assuming they're somewhat similar to the US, and this would not be allowed for a business to do, or at least without the proper approvals and whatnot to make sure it was safe. So it definitely is an ethics question, something that Johnny and Roland run into again when they buy the second motel and run across the like person with the gun and the bag of money, and need to decide what to do with that. Mm-hmm. But definitely the personalized pricing is really interesting. I do think I experienced that. I was traveling in India and we had like 8 hours before a train left, and it was leaving at like 4 a.m. or something. So we didn't want to have to book, or it was leaving at midnight. So we didn't have to book a hotel room for a whole night when we were only going to use it for like 5 hours to take a nap and shower before the train, but we had to. So I do think it's an interesting proposition.
Their costs might be the same, right? Like if they still have to change
exactly
the sheets and clean.
No one's going to check in at 1 a.m. after I leave. Mm-hmm. So they have to do it.
I think another topic that stems from that, not only are you segmenting, but you also have to think about who your customer is and moving forward. Cause I think this tackles branding as well. If you're known to the whole community and the market that, you know, you're doing prostitution and that is like your motel, then like your customer base of families probably just plummeted. You're probably not going to be getting families coming in, and your whole demographic changes. And so obviously this isn't what they intended, but if they were to continue doing things like this, then, you know, you're losing out on potential more profitable customers and other areas. So I thought that was another interesting point on branding that I think could be an issue moving forward. And yeah. Wasn't the landlord, is that the landlord that came in? He was like kind
he's
of
the
a
mayor.
Oh, Roland. He's the mayor.
Yeah.
Okay.
Shit. Yeah. Roland yeah. Shit. Get it? I didn't get it for so long.
That's hilarious.
I didn't get it until they named Roland Jr. Roland Morris Shit, and they made that joke. And I was like, oh my God, his name's Roland Shit. And I didn't get it until they did that.
That's hilarious. I did not notice that.
That's great. So there's a few other episodes that really dive deep into the motel. One that we love is season 4, episode 6, Open Mic Night, or Open Mic, because Alexis is charged with a new promotional strategy for the motel, and Stevie, who inherited the hotel from an aunt, so at this point she's the one who owns it, is worried that if the motel's actually successful, the Rose family will end up leaving her behind and they're going to move on to bigger and greater things. And eventually, really, really sweet, they surprise her by renaming the motel the Rosebud Motel. So it's theirs and just their family now. So it's really beautiful. But Alexis comes up with some great titles for herself as the head of publicity, such as the Freelance Brand Invigorator and the SVP and CEO of In-House Publicity, which is just great to think about.
She's really promoting herself.
Okay. And you know what? That's the job of a marketer, to be honest. So it's all about your personal brand. And I love freelance brand invigorator. I actually think you could probably find people with that title unironically on LinkedIn because brand consultants, that's definitely their vibe. They're like, I am the one who will just bring your brand to life and we will create magic and build this invigorating experience for your customers. So I definitely don't think it's too far off from reality.
I really resonate with Stevie's character, not necessarily due to like the business side of things. I mean, she is definitely on top of the operations and really can hold down the motel a lot more than the father can. But for her in particular, at one of these episodes, she was afraid. So she was wanting to explore different routes and different career paths and different options, which I think is a lot of like, why I'm at business school is like, I want to explore, I want to learn new things. And at the end of the day, she went back and was like, you know what? I tested kind of some things out. I know that this is what I want. So just on a personal note, I really resonated with that. And maybe one day I'll find that thing that I want to do.
Stevie's journey throughout the show is one of the best. Mm. And her character is just super complex for a sitcom. And seeing her go through this emotional journey of realizing she actually is happy where she is and accepting that and opening her heart to like, yes, this is a good place to be. And the hotel or the motel that they own really benefits from it. Like personally, the name Rosebud is 100% better than the name Bud Motel. So that was just a great rebrand.
I looked it up. It was actually just Schitt's Creek Motel.
Okay, even really better.
Really nothing special whatsoever.
Yeah, so definitely a much needed rebrand. And that kind of represents her journey as well. You know, you're budding your rosebud, like something new and promising. The future is bright. Rosebuds are about to bloom. So it's very poignant. I would stay at the Rosebud Motel. I think it's a cute name.
Yeah. And I think that she and Johnny have a great relationship and dynamic. And it's kind of, he's kind of fatherly to her, you know, kind of acts as a mentor at some points. But he has a lot to learn from her as well about how the town works and how to run a motel. The internet, how to open and save files on the computer. So I think they're a really good team in that they bring different strengths and complement each other really nicely. And they, you know, their different personalities play out well in different scenarios.
Totally. I mean, Johnny ran a business by himself before and it went bankrupt and lost to, I think they call it FlixNet, like they call it something very similar Interflex? To Netflix. Interflex, yes, Interflex. So they lost Interflex. So clearly the addition of someone like Stevie and this younger generation is really important to make sure their next business doesn't fail similarly to other upstarts like Interflex.
Mm. Kind of talking on Johnny again, I like his management in this scenario. He allowed his employee to explore and his main goal was to help her grow. I thought that was great. I will say the one thing that was, I feel like overlooked in that episode, but when Stevie went to go explore, he brought on the Roland Schitt guy in as like an investor wasn't an investor or another employee, I forget. But I thought that was a bad move because I don't know much about the Roland Schitt guy, but didn't seem like he had much value add. And so as a business to bring in investors or people, you really, we talk a lot about, you know, building a team and building the right founding team and how to run the business and making sure you get the assets and the skill sets that you need. And so I thought that one was a little bit of a red flag. So really good with the employees, maybe not so good with the bringing in more employees or investors.
Yeah, there's two different stages of Roland getting involved. One is they just hire him to be like a handyman because he needs a job because he's about to have a new child. And so they welcome him on. And then later on, when they want to expand the business and purchase the additional motel, they don't have enough cash. So that's when Roland and Jocelyn become investors. The one pro, I think, for having them involved, because you're right that he is a total, like, just, he's not great. is that they really care and like they're not going anywhere. Like they are, they like love Schitt's Creek and will be in this town forever. So I do think as far as hiring an employee that you know will last for a long time, so you're not gonna have to rehire or like risk of them leaving, definitely that's super low for the Schitts. All right, let's switch gears a little bit and talk about David's business. So the Rose Apothecary, such a great arc. One episode that stands out is season 3, episode 12, Friends and Family. So this is the episode where David is finally opening up Rose Apothecary for the first time to the public, and he wants to do a soft launch with friends and family only to kind of test out the store. And part of that is because he's so nervous that he doesn't feel ready to really open it up to the public. Definitely the people around him in his life think like it's going to be successful, so they tell everybody, and it ends up being pretty much everyone in the town coming to this friends and family soft launch. So he most likely loses some money on some discounts and free samples because people clearly were really interested. So what are some of your favorite takeaways from this episode?
I just loved like that kind of like dynamic between him and Patrick. They have like a really interesting repartee, like discussing what they should do. And he, you know, has a compelling reason to do a soft launch. He brings up that's how the Goop newsletter got started, through an exclusive.
If it's good enough for Gwen, it's good enough for David.
Yeah, so we should, you know, do the same approach. But I think, like you kind of mentioned, he was maybe a little insecure about how successful it would be. He didn't want to have expectations that the whole town would show up and then not have it. So he set his bar low. He also, you know, they did have a lot of people show up. And I think he, at the end, says something like, you know, maybe the fact that it seemed exclusive to people made sure that they attended. So if they had done the full, like, a grand opening, invited the whole town, like, maybe they wouldn't have all come if they thought that, like, it wasn't exclusive and if there wasn't going to be that sale. But yeah, it's definitely an interesting decision and one you can only make once.
But I really just resonated so much with the idea of the fear of failure and just seeing how that affected his conversations throughout the entire episode, talking to his family, his friends, strangers. He's just not confident. It seemed like he wanted to do a soft launch because of those reasons, but the underlying one was just, I don't want to fail. It seemed like the parents had a lot of expectations. And I definitely have struggled with fearing failure. And I think a lot of the entrepreneurial people in our class are struggling with potential similar feelings of like, do I really want to do this? Am I going to really commit to this? It's finally happening. How do I do this? How do I make sure that it does the absolute best that it can? And I like that whole dynamic of him understanding that fear is good, but it shouldn't cripple you. And I think it was really awesome for him to have that support that he had from his boyfriend that initially started to like get the word out of like, hey, we're going to launch and this is going to be epic and let's make this happen and make it big. So I really like that whole, underlining theme, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's such a good point. It really shows you that it's all about your foundation and it takes a village. It takes a creek to do it. And that so much of David's arc is that he feels like he's not good enough, or he feels nervous and not sure how to live his life. And then when he actually does do it, he proves himself wrong. He proves his family wrong and he's super successful. And one of the things that your comment, John, made me think of is with BCO at Anderson, which is business creation option. And that's where the entrepreneurs try to and succeed in creating a startup. And essentially the school helps you find teammates amongst your class that you work with throughout the year to actually launch and create your business. And a lot of successful companies have come out of that at Anderson. And so Rose Apothecary is like business creation option, where David was first on his own, just had this idea, teamed up with Patrick and Alexis, who also helped a lot. And then the whole family being there to support him, get people to that event and then it becomes a staple of the town. And so success is also not measured in, you know, it's not a national franchise, but it is super successful within the town and something he's really proud of, and can finally have that success on his own.
Yeah. And I think in an earlier episode, when he decides to start the business, like, he goes in to apply for his license and he doesn't have a name for it yet. He doesn't have really a description. He's like, not sure what he wants it to be, except that it should be a branded immersive experience.
Immersive experience, exactly. He has a feeling.
But he, you know, he's going to go for it anyway. Like, he has this drive to create something, and he sees that there is maybe a need in the town, something that he can bring, this kind of, you know, sophistication maybe that the town is lacking. And that's, you know, an area of strength for him. He was, I think he had some experience in like the art gallery world prior, back when they were in New York. So, you know, he's very familiar with bringing in like these great experiences and making things really elevated. So he just went for it and started out not really knowing exactly what it was going to look like in the end. And I think that's a great lesson to learn for entrepreneurs, is like, you know, you don't need to wait until it's perfect to get started. You should just have the enthusiasm and passion. And, you know, as you go along, people will help you redefine or flesh out your vision and get you the resources you need to make it your business successful.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I was curious to hear your thoughts on the discount, right? So they offered a special discount for friends and family. When you're trying to launch, I don't know, like, marketing, and I mean, I took the class, but it was a struggle. But when it comes to marketing, launching, what is, like, in your opinions, the best strategy? Do you go with that discount to try to entice more people to show up? Or do you go for it? You know what? No, it's a grand opening. We are the premier, like, apothecary. We got these soaps that smell so good. We got the wines that are so classy. So we're going to upcharge that. So I'd love to hear the thoughts around that strategy. And do you think it was the right way to go that route?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And it definitely depends on a lot of things. And for David in particular, the town is not classy. The town probably didn't even really understand what an apothecary is. Like, that word also doesn't really explain a lot about what would be in the store, just in and of itself. So what used to be there was like a general store that sold Christmas ornaments year round. Like, it was definitely not a type of product or business that the market was used to shopping at. And so it needed to do a lot of work to get people in the door. So for that reason, I think because they don't have a foundation of interest in this type of product, totally out of left field, I think it was really important for them to do some sort of discount open mic night event that got people in the door to see, oh, this is something that I find valuable, or this is something that I would like to buy. And so in that case, I think it's really important, versus if it had been another diner, because there's only one diner in the town, I don't think they would have had to do a discount at all. I think people would have just gone to the diner and been excited to eat at a new place because they want more options. But because this was a type of new product that didn't have that previous foundation of understanding amongst the market, they didn't know what the value prop was and that it mattered to them, it was more important to do free / discounted events. And a lot of apps actually go that way as well. You can think about Hulu. They were free for a long time, and then they developed a freemium model because they were finally had the amount of attention and people liked Hulu enough to start to charge for content, versus in the beginning you could watch everything for free. And I thought Hulu was God's gift to me, that I could watch every single episode of TV for free. And for those first few years it was out, I was just shocked that this existed. And then now I understand that they were just building up that subscription base so that they could eventually start charging. All right, so let's move to one of the best episodes, I think. Season 6, episode 5, the premiere. So this is the Crowning 3 or the crows three, the crowning. What is the actual
title? The crows have eyes.
Crows have eyes, the crowning. The sequel. The crows have eyes three, the crowning. And it is truly spectacular. Alexis, who has at this point gone to high school, gone to get her associate's degree in college, and started her own PR agency, which boss, babe, Alexis, get it, so proud of you, is running PR for Moira's movie premiere because the actual studio is not having a movie premiere, which is a bummer to Moira. So they decide, let's do one in the town. And so she sets up a red carpet event, invites everybody, and has this big idea of a experiential marketing campaign before the premiere to release crows outside of the movie theater, and they'll take flight, and it will just be a great photo op moment to celebrate the release of the film. And everything goes terribly wrong. So what are the thoughts on this strategy? Alexis as a PR maven, all of the above.
My thing is I like her, how do I say it? Maybe like chutzpah, or just willingness to try things. I think in all the episodes that I was assigned to watch for this podcast, she's always looking at things in a different perspective, trying to come up with creative ideas. And once she has her mind set on it, like, she's going to go and do it. She'll make it happen. She'll get the logistics down and she'll go for it. And I love that. Obviously it didn't work, but I think in that role, you kind of have to have that. It definitely seemed like if she didn't have a backbone, if she didn't have the confidence in her own abilities, she wouldn't have been able to even make any of it happen. Like, one being just like getting a red carpet was a huge struggle for her. She had to like pull a lot of strings, make a lot of negotiations with the rolling guy again, and then this other lady. And so she was able to make it happen in a very short amount of time. And it seemed like with her, her mother is very high maintenance and very much so fueled by vanity. And at the beginning, this premiere wasn't even going to happen because the mother didn't even want it. And then after, well, it was going to happen, but the mother wasn't going to show up. And then now all of a sudden she wants to show up. And then Alexis is now given this huge burden of like, all right, within like an hour or 2 hours, you got to do everything for having her mom show up and making it look extravagant. And she pulled it together. So that's like my first initial thoughts on Alexis as the PR agent.
Yeah, it certainly is trial by fire for her. I think even Moira says something about that to her, like, this is what it is to be a publicist. You have to be able to adapt really quickly. But I think that she does a really good job of making the best out of the situation. Obviously, they hoped that they would actually show the film after the crows were released. And I think everybody went home. Once
they were attacked by the crows. If anyone listening has not seen the episode, the crows actually attack.
Yes. Yeah. So it doesn't go the way that they had hoped. I think they said that they were actually seagulls painted black. Like, they weren't actually crows. So that's another thing. But she's able to turn it into like this this positive experience by reframing it as an intentional PR stunt. So they go on a news show and talk about it and talk about how like that's what we wanted to happen, and no crows were harmed, and you know, only one earlobe was severed, and so that actually I think generated a lot of buzz. And making something go viral is something that's really difficult to achieve and difficult to plan. I think that like this just showcases how hard marketers and PR agents work to try to make something really amazing and make something go viral. But it's mostly just luck, and you know, whatever happens in the moment, whatever people find interesting is going viral.
So true. You can't predict what is going to take off. And it really shows how important it is to be tapped into the cultural zeitgeist and, you know, the what's happening in the moment. And so when the clip took off and essentially having the wherewithal to say, actually, you know, this is what we planned. Haha, we got you. You thought it was a real crow attack. It was all just purposeful to get attention for the movie. And they get interviewed on Good Morning America because it was so popular and had been viewed everywhere. So it, and then that led to job offers for Alexis at really great PR agencies. So it was overall a huge win for her. So proud of our girl. And Moira ended up having a great premiere as well and loved the attention. So it was a win all around. Well, now I want us all to do Moira impressions.
Which one is Moira again?
The mom.
The mother.
The mom? Okay. Oh.
Alexis. Oh, Alexis. Oh, you've managed to create something that's absolutely winsome.
You sound a little too British.
I know, it's hard.
But how do you do it? Truly winsome.
Yes.
I don't know how to do it.
My wigs.
Yeah, I don't know if I can Johnny. Even attempt this.
Oh, God. Oh, Johnny. Johnny. Any other takeaways? Like, John, do you want to watch more of the show now that you've seen some?
Yeah, I think the show was enjoyable. Like, I really liked the episodes that I did watch. And I think there's so much potential there. It's just, I am just never good at watching shows. And it takes a lot for me to commit to a show, especially one that has so many episodes. The only show that I've really watched is The Office, but like I haven't seen Game of Thrones, Walking Dead, Breaking Bad, Queen's Gambit.
What I think this shows is that there are many paths to success. I have watched every show that John just mentioned, and we both made it to UCLA Anderson for our MBAs. So you can truly take any path and end up successful.
Yeah, there's no correlation or causation for watching shows and getting into UCLA Anderson, it seems. So
yes, it's nice. Exactly.
Might be more important if you want to work in film or television.
Yes, that's my excuse. Whenever I'm watching TV, I'm like, you know, I have to do this for my future.
It's research.
This is just really important for, you know, future interviews, which actually this weekend I am doing that. I am watching a lot of a certain studio's content. I also think one of the things I love about the show is that the characters are just totally out there and they're really comfortable being themselves. And I think a lot of people feel like they need to change or to fit a specific model of business school. You know, they just recently, the people who got in for round one at UCLA, we've been doing like admit calls with them and given admit buddies and sort of talking to a lot of the recently admitted students. It's a lot of like, oh, well, is it very competitive? If I don't have a banking or consulting background, will I fit in? And things like that. And it's like, there's every type of person. People love you for what makes you you. There's a reason why you got in, and there's no like one model of an MBA. That's why it's a really fun degree. And that's why it's really cool just to sit down and talk to people who maybe, you know, aren't recruiting for the exact same thing you are and learn about them.
Yeah, I love that. I have really enjoyed getting to know my classmates. And I think I also, you know, came into the program with a little bit of anxiety about like, you know, am I qualified to be here? Do I fit, you know, the right mold or whatever? And it's just been really refreshing to see how I think we all feel that a little bit, right? Like, I think we all feel a little bit like maybe we don't fit, but that means that we all fit. And the admissions team is really well qualified in determining if you're qualified to be here. So if they say you are, then you definitely are.
Yes. Just be like David, be like Moira, be like Alexis, be like Johnny, in all things that you do. Love yourself the way they love themselves, and everything will work out in the end. All right. Well, this has been super fun. Thank you both for indulging me in some Schitt's Creek conversations today.
Always happy to do so.
Yes. Yeah.
Appreciate the recommendation. Hopefully I'll continue watching a few episodes.
You should, really. All right. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll see you next time.
And there you have it. I cannot believe how many insights we had from only 4 episodes of this show. The Rose family certainly gave us a lot to talk about. And as an aspiring entrepreneur, I absolutely love seeing how the characters all made risky decisions that sometimes failed, but often paid off. Sometimes you just have to improvise as you go. And in the words of Alexis Rose,
Love that journey for you. Now, if you enjoyed this episode or if something resonated with you, tell us about it. Send us an email at theasweetpodcast@gmail.com, or better yet, leave us a review on your favorite podcast app and tell your friends all about the A-Suite. Big shout out to our host, Katie Schiff, our executive audio director, Alyssa Donovan, and our executive producer, Jody Christensen. I'm John Lee. Thank you all so much for listening today, and we'll see you next time here on the A-Suite Podcast, signing off. Thank you.